Anyway, let's move on. Because the number of complaints made about the state's planning system has more than doubled in the last year, according to the annual report of the Office of the Planning Regulator, whose chief executive and planning regulator at that office, Niall Cusson, joins us now. Good morning, Niall. Thank
good morning,
you for joining us.
Good morning, your listeners.
Are you Niall or Neil?
Niall.
Right, just to be sure on that, because I know at times, as in the soccer player Niall Quinn, he's originally Neil Quinn, but has become universally known as Niall. Now, I'm looking at your report, Niall, and your three core functions: evaluation of statutory plans, planning reviews and examinations, education, training and research. I suppose that all elicits the question, what exactly do you do? What is your function?
Yeah, okay, Clem, it's a good question. And we're there, if you like, overseeing the overall performance of the systems and the procedures used by planning authorities, 31 city and county councils across the country, on board and all and so on, in the delivery of their various planning services to the public. So we're, I suppose, keeping a watch over how they go about their work and how effectively they are implementing government policy, how effectively they're delivering planning functions to citizens at a day-to-day level, and obviously trying to improve public awareness about the importance of the planning process, the role of the public in the planning process, and providing various different training for elected members, for local authority officials, research into topical issues and so on. So we're about the good and the health of our planning process in this country.
You talk about, for example, that you're independent, that you have a customer focus. These are your values as listed mm-hmm. in the report: professionalism, transparency, engagement, and so forth. You're keeping an eye specifically on local authorities, is it? Or is it open to any member of the public to engage with your office?
Well, our focus is particularly around the local authorities, but indeed members of the public can and indeed do every day correspond with us very often, you know, trying to find out information about how the planning process operates. So, Clem, for your listeners, one of the things we do is we publish on our website, www.opr.ie, 15 leaflets, short little leaflets on various different aspects of the planning process. If you're doing extensions around the house, if you're carrying out work in your business or in the farm, or you know, you're concerned about your estate and how it gets properly maintained into the future and so on, how it's taken in charge by the council. All of these matters are contained in planning information leaflets that we publish on our website. But our day-to-day functions are examining, if you like, the planning functions of local authorities. Principally, many listeners will be familiar, you know, county development plans, local area plans are prepared. And for some years now, government policy has been emphasising the importance of all those plans fitting together in a coherent sort of way, and that they are addressing, you know, various different national policy issues around climate action or implementing the national development plan and so on. So we're watching all of those development plans and interacting with the local authorities, making submissions to ensure that they do what it says on the tin, so to speak, vis-a-vis implementing.
And God knows, on this programme, there's very few weeks go by we don't hear from one of the councillors in terms of the county's development plan, just for the whole county, or indeed for individual towns, with all those plans being assessed and everything else.
Yeah,
just some of the stats: 119 complaints received, up from 54 in 2019. It marked your first full year of operations since you were established in 2019. You evaluated 45 local authority plans last year compared to 25 in 2019. That's significant. Of the plans assessed by your office, 18 last year adopted by local authorities, 24 recommendations issued. And your report notes a significant increase in legal challenges to the planning process. Between 2017 and 2020, the number of cases brought against decisions of On Board Planála increased by 74%. Before we talk about that, you mentioned development plans there. I noticed on page 30 of your report that one of the issues you engaged with was Kildare County Council regarding what's called variation number one of the Kildare County Development Plan 2017 to 2023. You issued recommendations which you say were substantially addressed. I recall actually a discussion about that on this programme.
Yes, yeah, so that variation, Clem, as indeed many reviews of county development plans at the moment, was principally concerned with you know, ensuring that the Kildare County Development Plan fits with things like the National Planning Framework, which government publishes and published a little while back, a few years back.
And sorry for interrupting you, you've just jogged my memory. One of the things, I think, that was at variance at the time was that there was some sort of conflict between some elements of the proposed County Kildare Development Plan and the National Strategy.
Well, it wasn't that there was conflicts, such, but in that the National Planning Framework had clarified the appropriate, I suppose, projections and estimates of future population and housing, as you'd expect government to do, to kind of set, you know, an overall framework across the country. It clarified, the National Planning Framework clarified the figures, if you like, and the assumptions that the different development plans across the country should be using. So local authorities across the country since the publication of the National Planning Framework, and variation number one was part of that process, had to realign, if you like, their county development plans so that in terms of, say, you know, planning for schools into the future or water services or transport or whatever, that all of the different 31 local authority development plans fit with the overall framework at national level that government, you know, coordinates around.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of that, just some of the stats, by the way, because this is such an enormous area, 44,538 residential units, 44,000, was it? Residential units received planning permission in 2020. That was a 13.5% increase, as you'd expect. Dublin and the Greater Dublin Commuter Area, of which we are officially a part, significantly involved in that. Overall, then, from your perspective, Niall, because we could talk for hours about this, and I know you have a planning a pressing schedule as well. How is the planning process in this country as you oversee it?
Well, we have a planning process that has worked extremely well, particularly over the lockdown period, Clem, and I suppose that's what that was the significance of the reference there. Like when many local authority public offices were closed, and many local authority staff were working from, you know, from home, from bedrooms and attics and whatnot, and maybe a small number in the local authority offices, you know, and indeed thinking about the people who are preparing plans. You know, the private developers or applicants, sometimes the local authorities themselves, seeking the approval of their local elected members, you know, for housing schemes. There was a huge amount of work that kept going during the lockdown. And I suppose our report highlighted that it was remarkable that despite all of the headwinds and all of the, you know, the difficulties and the challenges of operating in a remote environment and literally flipping over to that over a matter of days and weeks, It was a great achievement that, you know, the show kept going in relation to processing planning applications, handling them and so on. That's not to say that there weren't maybe some technical difficulties at times. We all had difficulties in very different ways working through and living through lockdown. But it was remarkable nonetheless. And I think it was a great demonstration of public service and the commitment by local authorities to keep the show going in relation to particularly dealing with one of the biggest challenges we do face at the moment as a society, which is, you know, increasing our housing output in appropriate locations to meet the pressing needs of our economy, our society, and so on.
All right.
So
now, in terms of that, Niall, I see where there were six complainants engaged with your office in regards to Kildare. One final question for you, maybe, is given that councillors have such a central function in the whole planning process, I know the executive functions of various local authorities, including Kildare, but you know, 40 plus councillors sit around tables, they have their input into town development plans, into county development plans. I wonder, and I'm prompted by this, by a section in your report that talks about training for councillors. I often wonder, are councillors being put maybe in an unfavourable position in having to legislate effectively on planning decisions within a county without the necessary expertise or training?
Yeah, I mean, Clement, I would have, and the office, the staff here in the office would have the utmost regard and respect for elected members, 949 councillors across this country, in relation to the onerous and complex functions they have to discharge under the Planning Act and so on. And, you know, elected members very often, you know, they're ordinary citizens, people who, you know, have the courage to put themselves forward in their local councils to represent their local communities, you know, are coming then into very technical and sometimes very legal decision-making process where they are the authority, they are the competent authority, and indeed they're liable, you know, I suppose in the context of legal actions and so on through their counsel and so on. So it is an onerous and a complex area. So, Clem, that's why we prioritised, and we're only 2.5 years old, our creation kind of coincided with the local authority elections and, you know, the whole raft of new councillors that they themselves came into being in 2019. We prioritised the putting in place of a national training programme for the 949 councillors. Because in effect, before the establishment of our office, there never was a training program at a national level for councillors in relation to their planning functions. And I have to say, the response from the elected members has been astounding in terms of the participation in our events. We had 150 or so councillors attend an event that we organised virtually Friday week last. Indeed, this year we've had over 1,000 councillors attend about half a dozen events that we've organised roughly every month, every 2 months. We had pretty much the same 800 or so in 2020. So there's an appetite there, Clem, from elected members to find out more in relation to their functions. And I'm delighted that the office has been in a position to provide that training. And I look forward to working with the Association of Irish Local Government and the various different elected members right across the country in, you know, continuing that training programme into the future. Because whilst I suppose the premise of planning in terms of healthy communities, you know, good places and so on is quite a simple one, achieving that is complex, as you know. You've reported on this for many a year and I've listened to you in the past. I think it is becoming more complex, particularly because of the environmental legislation, which, you know, is there to protect our environment and make sure that this lovely green land we have is even greener and better into the future and so on. So the planning process has become more complex, and elected members and indeed officials need support, need training, need information, need research indeed into the various, you know, things that they need to know about in the discharge of their functions.
Well, I have to say that's great, and it's very reassuring for us as their constituents to know that that elevated level of expertise is now brought to informing their decisions in regards to these plans. It's the annual report 2020 of the Office of the Planning Regulator. You can read all about it on opr.ie, where you can find out how it uses its services and whether you can avail of it or not in what is an incredibly important aspect of our life and getting more important as development exponentially goes on right across the country, and in terms of the way that development will impinge upon our environment in future years to come. Niall Cusson is the Chief Executive and Planning Regulator, and that's his annual report. Niall, great talking to you. Thanks for taking the time.
Good morning to you.
And good morning to you as well.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
We're returning now to the Clane Maynooth Municipal District. Joining me is Councillor Tim Durkin of Fine Gael. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, how are you?
Good, thank you. We're going to begin with your motion asking the council about outsourcing housing grant inspections. This is under the housing adaptation grants for older people and people with a disability scheme in obviously the municipal district area to clear the backlog. Is it quite a backlog, Tim?
There is, and the simple answer was caused by COVID, when we were in a number of lockdowns, no inspections could be conducted by the council. So we have a fairly severe backlog at this stage. So my suggestion at the Clane Maynooth area meeting was that we take €20,000 from property tax, we send it to full council and ask each municipal district to do the same, and then ask the executive of the council to find €100,000 within the budget, which would alleviate the issue, clear the backlog, by outsourcing some of the inspections to get the backlog of grants that are pending in the council at the moment cleared.
Yeah, just to let the listeners know, the details in funding for 2021, the housing adaptation grants for privately owned homes were €3.1 million there and thereabouts, I should say, and then disabled person grants for council owned homes was €517,504. Tim, moving on now to fire damage in houses in Kilcock. You asked the council to provide an update on this.
Yeah, so these houses were damaged accidentally. A fire was caused in one, and it spread, unfortunately, to other houses. So there's four houses damaged in that. And unfortunately, it takes some time when it comes to fire damage for the insurance process to run its course. So the contracts were signed on the 28th of September, and work is due to commence 20 days from that date. And it's a 30-week project. So thankfully, those four houses will be returned to habitable use, and they will be reallocated at that stage.
Okay, good news for those residents. The council you asked them to give a briefing on when they were on the Maynooth local area plan, with particular reference to the route selection of the Maynooth Orbital Road, given the possible design amendments which might have to be made at Jackson Bridge. That's to accommodate the proposed design of the Dart Plus works. Just remind us exactly where Jackson Bridge is, Tim.
So Jackson Bridge is west of Maynooth, only by a little bit. It's almost opposite Lara Bryan Cemetery. It is a listed monument or listed structure. And at the moment, the Maynooth local area plan, the orbital route that's on the LAP map, passes that bridge to the east. Obviously, we'd have to have a bridge crossing the canal and the railway at that place. Once we had briefings from Éireann Éireann in relation to Dart West, they have a proposal to put another bridge west, probably by about 400 or 500 metres, to access their proposed depot. So my way of looking at that would be, instead of putting two bridges in place and having three bridges side by side, try and come up with a design solution that would accommodate, the use of one bridge would accommodate both needs. So a bridge for the ring road, mm-hmm. but also to be used for the for access to the proposed Dart depot. It'd save a considerable amount of money. Like bridges of that kind of scale, you're talking anything from about 20 to 30 million euro.
Yes.
And the intention would be, well, the proposal at the moment is to make Jackson Bridge a cul-de-sac, because they can't, obviously, it's not wide enough to take a dual Dart line underneath the bridge that's
and
there.
I guess the obvious thing there, Tim, is just how much congestion Maynooth Town does suffer with. We heard earlier from Misha O'Carroll what the town may be in the next few years. Obviously, such a busy hub in terms of education with the university.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the last traffic survey, we've just started another one now, but the last one was done in 2016, and there was 18,000 traffic movements per day. So in Maynooth alone, the population increased since then. While we don't have any census figures, Maynooth's population residentially is probably between 17,500 and 19,000, plus 13,000 students on top of that again. So there's a vast amount of people.
Absolutely.
And really, we need to get the infrastructure in to get the traffic moving around the town rather than through. But also, we need to see a modal shift from car dependent movements. So, for journeys, yes. Like down to the local shop.
Advising listeners to take the bike or anything else, or just the owl feet, Tim. Listen,
absolutely.
Thank you very much for joining me this morning, Fine Gael Councillor Tim Durkin of the Clane Maynooth Municipal District.
Thank you, Tim, and thank you, Ciara. That's Councillor Tim Durkin. This is Senator Mark Wall. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Clem.
Now, Mark, during the week we featured some audio of you speaking to Simon Coveney regarding contracts in the Defence Forces and a number of those in the hundreds coming up, and you calling for them to be renewed rather than losing that skill set from the security forces. You also spoke about, was it dereliction around the Curragh camp?
Yeah, it's something that I've been following for a while, Clem, and it's something that the Minister actually mentioned a year ago in his own speech to fellow colleagues in Kildare South in the Dáil. So I was following up on that just to see what he was going to say to me when we were debating the defence bill last week. He did admit that there's still some dereliction, as we all know, in the Curragh, unfortunately, but he did say that there was an investment plan in place, and he hoped to improve that investment plan as well, which we all hope. You know, I did highlight that we still haven't word on the new secondary school yet, and that's very important for the people of the Corran, indeed the people of Kildare Town and Newbridge. We're still looking for a site for that, and that will help the whole area of the Corran improve. And look, in fairness to the Minister, he said there's an investment plan. We're all waiting for that to be rolled out. We're hearing that there's a new cadet school as part of the NDP plan. That's also to be welcomed. You know, these issues for the Corran are very important. The most important line I got from the Minister's speech is that he recognised the Corran as being the flagship of the Defence Forces. Very important to say that. We're all aware of that over the years, Clem, and we want investment to match that now.
Indeed. But what about those contracts? Because I was concerned when I heard the numbers being quoted. Is it up to 600 or 700 soldiers' contracts are due to run out around December, and that these might not be renewed, and people would essentially be, on one hand, out of work, and number two, we'd have lost a considerable investment in their training?
Yeah, and it's a serious worry. PD4, and you mentioned their conferences on this week, have been highlighting this for a long period of time. They're called the post-94 contracts, those that went into the Defence Forces in and around 1994. Their contracts are due to expire in December of 2022, so just a little over 12 months' time. We've been asking for a while, indeed my colleague Brendan Howland brought this up in the Dáil on Thursday. I brought it up in the Shannon on Tuesday with the Minister on both occasions. And the Minister has come back to say that he's aware of 200-plus contracts. So the figure is somewhere between 200 and 700. But as you say, we cannot afford to lose the expertise of the Defence Forces. The Minister has said in the coming weeks he will be sitting down with PD4 to discuss these contracts and ensure that these much and vastly experienced personnel are not lost to the Defence Forces. And that's what we all want. And we want that to happen as quickly as possible, because obviously those people need to plan for their future, Slim. So a bit of good news, I suppose, during the week on that.
I can't see the sense behind investing huge amounts of money in training these soldiers, giving them the skill sets they have, and then, against their will, saying, that's it, thanks very much, off you go now into Civiland, and maybe let Civiland have the benefit of whatever skills you have, and they're lost, given that the taxpayer has paid for this training in the first place. Briefly then, Mark, you're also calling for a price reduction for students' travel fare in recognition of the student accommodation crisis.
Yeah, we've had a large number of queries to our office on this, Clem, from students in Monsterevin, Kildare Town, Newbridge and Matoya, and indeed all throughout South Kildare. A lot of students weren't able to get accommodation this year because of the crisis that my colleagues in the Labour Party have highlighted that's happening in Dublin at the moment. But unfortunately, where students staying at home should be saving money, it's costing them as much in train fares as it would be in rent. In one situation, one student from Monsterevin is paying €100 a week on train fares alone, and then is paying €7 on the bus as well. So that's quite considerable. He might as well be staying in Dublin and paying, as he's paying, €450 a month in train fares at the moment, Clem. So it really is serious, and we're looking for a reduction in or an extension of the short hop zone. It's something I've highlighted on your programme before, and we still have the situation. And for anyone that was on the M7 and N7 this morning, they will know this. The amount and increase in traffic that there was like a car park this morning. But people are actually driving from Newbridge to Salins train station because they're paying €24-25 a day in Newbridge, and if they go from Salins, it's costing them €9.80. So that's the difference that's still there, Clem. An extension of the short hop zone, the medium hop zone, I don't care what the NTA or Minister calls it, but we need to see savings for our commuters. We need to take the cars off the M7, N7, put them back onto trains and allow them to travel into work. But this is particularly for the students who are paying astronomical figures at the moment, and then, as I say, might as well be staying in Dublin with the figures that they're paying.
All right, going to leave that there, Mark. Contributing factors to this morning, I take your point about the M7 and the enhanced traffic levels that are on it, but there were two accidents within a short distance also this morning which contributed to much of the traffic stuff there. We'll leave it there, Mark. Just time getting away from us. That's Senator Mark Wall, Labour Senator. On those issues he brought with the Minister during the week, you might have heard the audio. We played his contribution from the Shannon, in particular regarding to those PD4 contracts, dereliction in the area of the Corran camp, and now calling for a price reduction for students' travel fare. I can't ever get a comprehension on why there's such a difference in the fare level between travelling from Newbridge and travelling from Salins. Three times the fare level. It just doesn't bear up to scrutiny. Now, back to our pronunciation of words, whether you say contributed or distributed and whatever else, a listener says, I also heard the term of late that we grinded out a victory. We grinded out a victory. Yeah, this listener says, should they not be saying we ground out a victory? Yes, they should. And another one you hear often at the end of matches when managers are speaking is, we played fantastically well. Now, if you're playing fantastically, you're playing more than well. You don't put the two words, or the lad done brilliantly well. All these kind of things. We're just throwing them up for a bit of fun in regards to that. Good morning, Clem. I'm just wondering if you could ask your listeners if anyone's having problems with AES Board Namona bins not being collected. Okay, I won't read out your name. They're now B&M, by the way. They're no longer AES, they're B&M. Clem, I just heard an ad on KFM from Super Value, and I'm going to call in there later to see and maybe buy a cowboy steak, because I don't think I ever had one. Did you? No, I must find out what a cowboy steak is too. Owen is up next. He's heading to the Clanmanuth Municipal District.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, let's go back to the Clanmanuth Municipal District meeting then in the past few days. And joining me on the line now is Social Democrats Councillor Aidan Farley. Good morning, Aidan.
Morning, Owen.
So if we start off and look at a question that you brought forward. First of all, you wanted the council to update members on the taken in charge process in Cushnamona in Coolera.
Yeah, Owen, and you'll remember, and your listeners might remember, about 18 months ago, KFM would have heard directly from residents of Cushnamona who have been experiencing some really difficult times when it comes to some of the services in the housing estate. So myself and various other councillors had been working with the council to try and progress this estate to getting it taken in charge. And so on the 1st of October last year, 2020, we had been told by the council that this would be on the list for 2021. So I was quite confused, unfortunately, to see the report come back this council meeting a year later that there had been no request to take this estate in charge, which is very frustrating because obviously there had been and we've been doing comprehensive work beforehand. So the council have come back and they're going to look at it because they don't understand what's after happening. That there's been a year now where essentially nothing happened. We kind of, as councillors, let them off it. They had said it would be on the list for 2021 and now it's not, which is extremely frustrating for residents there. So we're going to keep at this because obviously the confirmation had come from the council last year that it won't be taken in charge.
Yeah, absolutely. The next motion that you brought forward, Aidan, we touched on with Councillor Pádraig McAvoy on the programme yesterday, and you are looking for something similar. You want a traffic count to be conducted following the opening of the Salins bypass there in Clane, because I'm assuming there's more traffic going in and out of the town.
There is, Owen, and unfortunately I suppose what we're doing at the minute is we're all experiencing it, but we're kind of relying on anecdotal information to kind of guide us in our planning. And the Director of Roads, before the bypass opened, kind of said to us that at MD meetings, we don't expect any sort of increase in traffic in Clane because of the Salins bypass. And look, it's a fantastic new piece of infrastructure in our county, but I think the problem that it has solved in Salins, it's just really pushed that problem into Clane, and we could see that coming. So a traffic count has been done in May, which kind of showed, and I can come back to you and your listeners, they're going to send me on the details, the specifics, but it had showed an incremental increase in traffic, but that was in May when still a lot of people were kind of working from home. So the council have committed to doing a second count on the road, both the Kilcock Road and the Salins Road coming into Clane in quarter four of this year. So again, it's just important for us to know exactly what we're dealing with in terms of numbers. Councillor McAvoy said at the meeting as well, like HGV traffic. So there's a lot of concerns in Clane now in terms of the traffic. So we just need to kind of get on that.
Okay, has a suitable location been identified for the development of a changing places facility in the MD?
No, it's really unfortunate. Well, just to make sure your listeners are aware, so a changing places is a bathroom facility that caters for people with a diverse mix of needs, Owen, and something that we've kind of been pushing for in the MD. There's a couple of new libraries coming, for example, in Clane, and we had maybe hoped. We had a really good conversation with Marion Higgins at the council meeting, and she said she's kind of committed to that she'll go back to look at the plans for the new Clane Library to see if it's feasible. But then just to make your listeners aware, she also confirmed that the new library in Naas and the county library, the archive library, both will have changing places installed in them. So there is good news there. It mightn't be specific to the MD, but I suppose we have to start moving on those, and if we can get one into the library in Clane again, it would just be a fantastic step in making sure that our services and amenities are viable for everybody.
Okay, and just finally then, Aidan, two final points, and briefly on these if you would. Did you get any update on the vacant properties in Ann Street in Prosperous, and also what's the latest around the Kilcock Dart Plus campaign?
So no is the short answer for the vacant houses in Ann Street. The council have committed to coming back to me on that. They didn't answer the question in specifics this week, unfortunately, and so they've committed to come back to me. So I'll let you know on as soon as I'm aware. What I asked for was the length of time and how many units have been vacant in Ann Street. We don't need to wax lyrical on this. There's a huge housing crisis and it frustrates the hell out of so many people to see so many units just lying empty. So look, the council have a busy work programme, but they've committed to coming back and let me know how long these units have been empty and what their plans are for them. And just to bring your listeners' attention, if we could, a fantastic group in Kilcock have been working really hard on a submission for the DART Plus programme, which is, as listeners may know, is currently being proposed to run to Maynooth, and so many people feel that it makes absolute sense to go that little bit extra, about 2 kilometres extra on, to open it up to Kilcock residents as well. So far in the proposal, NTA and Ayrshire are saying that that won't happen, but we've seen a huge campaign and effort from community members in Kilcock. So the deadline for those submissions is this Wednesday. So any listeners that are thinking about getting on that, if you go onto the DART Plus website, you'll be able to make a submission there.
Okay, Social Democrats councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Aidan Farley. Thanks indeed for joining us this morning, Aidan.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks indeed, lads, for that. Now, keep your last few messages coming in, but just to wind up. By the way, Owen, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago RACO, a couple of years ago, that their annual conference was held out in Killeshee. Well, I can now confirm exclusively that the Biennial Delegate Conference 2021 will again be held in Killeshee Hotel in Naas from Monday 22nd of September to Tuesday 23rd of November, Owen.
Okay, very good. I remember the two of us were actually out at that and conference, and it was quite interesting, it has to be said. So that'll take place, when did you say? Just give us the dates again.
The Monday and Tuesday, the 22nd and 23rd. Well, Monday the 22nd, Owen, there's a banquet that night. Now, I'm invited to that. I don't see your name on the letter at all there, you know, so
right.
I'll have to get the dress suit. And the next day then would be the deliberations. So yourself or Kira can go there, you know.
Right, that's of this month, is it?
That's in November.
Oh,
yeah,
November,
so it's
okay.
quite a bit away anyway. But thanks to Cumann and Conor King, I've just seen the letter. But it stipulates Clem only for the dinner. Don't bring Owen. Don't bring Kira. I'm only joking. They don't. Now, I want to go back to that book, Owen, to finish today. On because I know you remember this. It's a school book from 1938.
Oh, the one that you wrote, is it?
Yeah. Called Geography for Junior Classes. And it's the most amazing little book. Now, I'm taking junior classes to mean junior classes in secondary school. But the amount of information about it in Ireland and every country in the world and all little stats and figures and things like that is quite remarkable. As I said yesterday, this was brought to us, George Bagnall up in 10A Vanessa Lawns in Selbridge, drove all the way down here a couple of days ago to give it to us. It was in response to a query we had from Liz Cullen in Kilcullen that she was looking for a book that was there in the 60s, a geography book. We haven't heard anything on that. But this little book, I'm going to give you a little quiz to see, will you be able to answer the questions that the children would have answered in 1938? But for example, because this little book has a whole series of quizzes as well to test the pupils of the time. Did you know, though, that Ireland has all these islands? Rathlin, which is north of Antrim. Copeland Islands off Down. I've never heard of those. Lambay and Ireland's Eye, which is off the coast of Dublin. The Salty Islands off Wexford. Cape Clear Island, which is just off Cork. Bear Island in Bantry Bay. Valentia Island in Kerry. Of course, the Aran Islands in Galway, Achill Island, Clare Island, Inishturk Island, all of those off Mayo, and Aranmore and Tory Island, which is off Donegal. I'm sure a couple of more islands have been discovered since that back in 1938. But are you ready now, Owen Beattie, to make a show of yourself?
Not particularly, because I didn't know this was happening.
All right, and, okay.
You know, the students would have had time to study, but I didn't.
Okay, right. Here was the little test given to students. This was an exam for students of the junior classes in 1938. Now, here's your man with 14 A's he got in the leaving. You know, and
I didn't do geography, though.
Okay, let's see what you know then. What ocean lies to the west of Ireland? Or the west of Europe?
The Atlantic.
I'll give you that. Where are the Andes Mountains?
It's in South America.
South America's a big place.
Chile?
All right, okay, I'll give you that. Now, I know this guy's out cheating on his phone now.
I'll
he's Googling.
Look at you.
Where is the Cape of Good Hope?
Hold on, I'm standing here to look at you. The Cape of Good Hope, I don't know the answer to that one. Is it in Africa?
Is it Alaska? No, jeez, God.
Or Africa.
Oh, my good God, he definitely didn't do geography.
Did I get it right with Africa, first of all?
Yeah, but Africa is a big place.
But, I mean, the answer is correct. Is it in
Africa? Is there someone reading in... Someone's making signs in the window of Studio 2 to you, telling you where it is. Is Ciara Plunkett out there making signs in the window to you?
Well, you tell me how you're going to sign Africa from outside.
Well, she could do that. She's a very good actor.
No.
Ciara Plunkett
is. So is that 3 out of 3 without Googling?
No, the Cape of Good Hope is off the tip of South Africa.
Right, which is Africa. It's 3 out of 3.
Where is Ceylon? C-E-Y-L-O-N.
C-E...
Y-L-O-N. Remember, the year is 1938 now.
France?
You're wearing your short trousers. France. Oh, Jesus, France. It's in Sri Lanka. It's France.
Oh, yeah.
What is the capital of France? Come on now, think hard. This is very difficult altogether. Try your best.
Paris,
right. Into what sea does the River Nile flow?
The Mediterranean?
I don't know, I can't tell you that. No, I'm not too sure. Where is the Bering Strait? B-E-H-R-I-N-G.
That's Alaska. Up around Alaska, Russia.
I see, right. In what continent is Mexico? Be careful now.
It's not South America, is it?
No, it most definitely is not. You idiot, you.
North America?
Of course it is.
You might get away
with Central America, but North America will do. I'll take that. Now, out of 10 questions there, you got about 50% right.
That's a lie.
And the other are staggering.
80%. I got 2 wrong. Sri Lanka, who I don't think anybody would have got that.
Well, we'll have another one tomorrow from this book in 1938, which was called Geography for Junior Classes. You need to go back to school. It was published in Dublin. And thanks to George Bagnall, and we'll try your general knowledge again tomorrow, but it leaves an awful lot to be desired.